Here.
Mrs. Myers.
Here.
Mr. Van Wassenova. Mrs. Vincent.
Here.
Mrs. Williams.
Here.
Mr. Zimmerman.
Here. This is to finish up our first workshop, so I'm going to hand it back over to Mr. Shaw.
All right. Appreciate that, sir. So, yes, Darla's share, we had a literature book purchased on there. And so it did come into the boardroom right there, so that we held discussion in the boardroom. But I didn't want to provide any other time right here because it's on here, if there's any other discussion we have.
So why, when we identified that we didn't get to it in our work session, why didn't we withhold that so we had the opportunity to go through? And it's not a matter of trust. I really, people don't understand that. Like, there are not books on history. There's no primary sources. There's no goodness in life. Like, it's so dark and dreary. And I have to have someone look at me and say, where is the goodness that this world has within this book purchase? Everybody's opinion and view on a book is their own, but I agree with Tom. There's no way that book purchase review represents an entire population of people. There's just no way. And how we did not pull it when we didn't get to it.
Yeah. So, full disclosure, I didn't think about the idea to pull it off there, because I knew we would go just to discuss it, almost like a calendar or anything else that we didn't get to that was on the agenda. And so that's why I didn't go, okay, let's
move this off. We did discuss the calendar in here.
Right, but I knew we were going to have more discussion on it, because it wasn't fully finished there. And so that was just the idea that I didn't even think about going, okay, well, let's pull that off of there. It was that I knew that we would still have discussion and could have a discussion in that room.
It's already been approved, so what's the point of discussing it now?
There really isn't.
That's my point. It's already done.
Is there still opportunity for further discussion as long as we don't exceed the monies that we approved as far as removing books or...
No, I don't think so, because we voted on that motion. We'd have to go back and look at the purchase.
So the purchase is for 1,700 some books on a thing. How did you get to 25,000?
That's 1,700 titles.
Titles.
Duplicates.
Titles slash.
Oh, yeah, because there are book series. Because there are sets.
Kids are going to run them as
class. Too many to really.
I don't know how we get to 25,000, though. Like, 100. I didn't think there were
100.
Oh, look what I wrote.
I know. I believe you.
I heard what you said. 2,500 to 3,000.
Thank you. Sorry. I apologize.
I said 2,500
to 3,000.
Thank you.
We have to purchase those books.
Yeah, here comes, if we're going to mention anything, like here's a book called Tokyo Ghoul, and it's based on an anime series, and anybody that understands anime knows exactly what the anime series is about, and when you look, it says superpowered humans who feed on human flesh. Like, you're telling me that of all the millions of books in the world, that's like, what?
Fiction?
It's something kids probably read.
Mm-hmm. Well, because that's all they have to read. If this is all they have to read.
No. This is choice. This is only a choice library. This is not the curriculum. Kids are not required to read these books.
I understand that.
It
is
a choice.
The choices in here are like a dark twist on Romeo and Juliet. I'm sorry, I didn't see Romeo and Juliet in there. If we're going to do that, why not have that in there?
That's part of the standard curriculum.
So you're saying... I'm really confused, because my understanding was the libraries are dismantled, and
the school libraries are dismantled.
Yes, and teachers have developed their own libraries in their classroom, which we were hoping to get access to those books and that process. So these books, was my understanding, are going to be the books that are available for students to read outside of what their teachers put in their individual classroom.
Outside of the curriculum?
No, curriculum-based books are classroom-based books. The curriculum has the actual books that go with the curriculum.
Correct.
Yes, so
right.
These are
so
not
these are
curriculum-based.
Choice.
These are books that will be available for students to read outside of the books that are brought into the classroom library.
But they could still be in the classroom.
That's not the point.
So I think we're...
Where else can book, if where else are they accessing books within the school system if it's not from this list and their classroom libraries?
So to clarify right there, that I think it's a terminology that's getting lost, is that in classrooms, you walk into that classroom, Terry, I know you've been in them also, if you need to pop in here, is that you're going to have the choice books, and then you're also going to have, and that's part of the classroom library, and at the same time too, you're going to have a set of books that you will be using that might be whole group, small group, and that's part of the work that they do, and it could be, like you were alluding to, Romeo and Juliet, or it could be
Beowulf, Lord of the Flies,
something
like
else, yeah.
Fahrenheit
so
451, the classics.
So here lies the problem. When we toured and you look at the libraries within these classrooms, they're very small. They're very small. And what books are included in that classroom, as an oversight, I think that we as a board are obligated to know what is being given to the students that you tell me that is so much greater than this. Like this, they actually have a book in here on Auschwitz, and you go, great. They're learning about history, and they're learning about a very bad time in our history, but those are things that you can learn from. That's not what the book is. The book is a romance between a worker at Auschwitz that fell in love with someone at Auschwitz, and that is the base of the story, and it turns a horror thing into a romance. And I'm like, why didn't you just give a book on historical World War II? There's so many primary sourced books out there that can give you the historical facts from multiple... Your educators know this.
I disagree on a take on just that. I think that... From what you're saying, haven't read the book. I would want to read the book, or maybe not, maybe. But just because it's a romance that develops there doesn't mean it's turned Auschwitz into something that's great. I mean, that I haven't read the book. It may be a very powerful message about.
I mean, think of all the books that have been made into movies.
Until we've read the book, we probably shouldn't determine on exactly what it is.
Well,
I'm just
no way
telling
I'm
you
reading
what
every
it
book
is.
Right.
There's a book on cannibalism. It's called The Snow Fell Three Graves Deep, and it's on cannibalism. And that's not the only book on cannibalism out there. So I'm like, our work session, what I would ask is please show me on the list where there are books that aren't constantly in these categories. Because I seriously went through randomly and tried to find, I did, and I can't find any. So in our session, I would say, please show them to me. If it's a cross section, if it's cultural diversity, if it's a representation, where's the other side of the representation? I didn't find it. Maybe someone else here did the same thing and they found it.
I think we're in a political disagreement. That we're
I don't think
not,
it's politics. It's book choice.
I think it is. And I don't find, even if it's something that I wouldn't choose to write, read, wouldn't choose for my daughter to read, I don't find it my right to tell someone else they can't read it.
The trouble is...
But shouldn't there be more books also, not just this stuff?
Well, those are important conversations between the teacher, the student, and the parent.
Right? I mean,
yeah,
don't they...
That doesn't occur. I'm sorry, Carrie, that doesn't occur. Because the student, unless they tell their parents or show the book to their parents, the parents don't know.
And every family is different. Every family is different, I agree. But we sit down after dinner, when I'm home for dinner, and we have 20 minutes of reading time. All of us sit down in the living room with a book.
And if the, you know, I
not every family's like that.
Just to let you know, because Milan Schools went through this and it was very, very contentious. And it still is contentious there. It tore the community apart because the school was allowing. Now, I do have to say, because I've gone through this whole list, and the worst of the worst that was in the Milan School District, we don't have.
Correct.
So that's good.
And that's part of the vetting system. The teachers went through and they used the scoring that you suggested.
Tom went through.
I went through.
Tom went through and got
and the teachers removed those books from that list.
Some of them.
Right, but if you hadn't done that.
But the ones that ended up on fives. It was a score of 1 to 5 and all the fives were removed.
Age appropriateness. Now, some of these books may be fine for a senior.
Right.
But they're probably not fine for a freshman.
Correct.
And I have no idea to know what classroom means again. And some of these, with a little bit of discussion, probably are fine, as long as the teacher can explain some of these from a historic perspective, like the 1619 project, which may be fine, but the teacher's got to explain the drawbacks and why that's not history. It's indoctrination, to be honest. And there's others like that. So I really... You know, I hate it when somebody says we're banning books. We're not banning books.
Right.
What we're doing is saying we as a school district, it's not appropriate for us to make those available to the students. If the parents and the student really want to read that book, go on Amazon. You can get any of these on
Amazon. Or go to the public library.
And the public library. And even some of these, you go to the Monroe Public Library out in South Custer, and it says you have to be over 16 to read this book, to check it out or whatever. So... Again, a little bit of its age appropriateness, and you know, unfortunately, I know people say we trust the teachers and that, but a lot of these teachers are young. They have not been parents. They don't understand the viewpoint from a parent and the appropriateness of a book. So that concerns me.
Do you think any of these kids have cell phones that would read these books? Mm-hmm.
Well,
we're not saying
that they can't.
No. I'm asking a serious question.
Well, there's no doubt.
But why should we give it to them? They're going to read the same thing.
And that's fine.
If we put it on a list of not allowed, they're going to look for it.
But it wouldn't be a list of not allowed. We need a cross-section. You need a diverse book list that covers more than just this stuff. And that's what my whole premise is. I'm not saying you can't read about cannibalism, but I hope someone's going to tell them cannibalism like is harmful to your health, you know? But there should be a cross section.
I don't think anybody's going to read about cannibalism and come in here and start cutting my skin off.
Well,
I think
again,
the students are brighter than that.
I think that it should include more.
I think what Mrs. Flynn was trying to say, and she didn't get a chance to, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay, go ahead.
Is that this is just a small portion of the classroom libraries. This is not only what's going to be available in the classroom.
We don't know that because we don't see those books
either.
Well, I'm a librarian, and I can tell you that there are every classroom I go into, there are books. And it's the books... The classrooms are in the classrooms, not every, but there are books in classrooms. And Monroe Middle School still has a library.
But to the point, if Tom would not have went through that list and pulled off those books, now I don't know if anybody looked at what those books were, but that was high sexualized pornography. By definition of pornography, not mine. By what you would definish, if Tom had not have done that, those books would be in that school system right now. So those are the same teachers that are putting books in the classroom. It's just truth. I'm not pinpointing anybody. That's just fact. If Tom wouldn't have done that, they would have been there.
So a couple.
And that's the teachers that put them on there.
And so a couple items for that, and I appreciate Tom giving that to us. And so. As everything, you learn through things. And so we learned a few things there, and that's where the tightening up the vetting process. The other part, and I just have to be honest with you guys, you as a board member walking into a classroom and start digging through a teacher's library would not be a good thing.
Well, that's why we asked, could we get a listing?
But
could
that's
write
the thing,
them out? Could we do anything? Nothing's ever possible.
Right, there's not. Well, but the teachers don't have, and we're not going to ask teachers to go and generate a list of the books that they have on their shelf.
Then how do we know that the 20 books that Tom pulled off are not on teachers' shelves?
Trust.
Well,
no, they were on the books to purchase. So obviously, the group of people that approved those books... And it was, if I look at the paperwork, there was a teaching what'd you call it? The very last paragraph, it called the English department, or I don't remember what the language was, and I don't want to misquote it, but they, as a unit, according to that paperwork, approved those books to be on that list. Those are the same teachers that would approve them to be in their classroom.
Yeah, the verbiage is
true story.
The books that are on this list that follow have been thoroughly researched by the teachers in the English department.
Yes.
And I question that. I don't believe that's true.
I don't believe it either.
How long have we been buying this book stuff? How long have we been talking about this?
Since the fall.
Mm-hmm. Since the fall.
Well,
we didn't get a list though until
this really started
last
probably last September, October.
Right.
Because it was part of the.
So it was a year. So it would have
been over a year.
It's been over a year.
Yeah. And so this was the first, really, when we brought it here, the first go at it and the purchasing. And so there's that. What I was referring to though is we had a parent last year. That from the elementary, and she came to me and was pushing to look at and wanted the list of all the books, you know, in that classroom. And that elementary teacher's classroom, you know, there's probably 600-700 books in there, and so, or more. And so to ask that teacher to go and do that couldn't happen. So the parent and I, we worked through with the principal and the teacher a way to handle that. And so it was about self-reads and things of that sort. So we worked at an individual level with that parent. What I'm saying to you, though, is we don't have, except for now, we're beginning, because, for example, the purchase that we have at the elementary, we have a hard list of those textbooks. This, we have a hard list. And so going forward, these larger purchases, we have a hard list. And can we continue to now keep a more a list as purchases are made at the building levels? Yes. But to go back and look and see what we have, and do in any kind of list of what books are here. I'm just saying, we don't have that list, but the other part is that, and this is an advisory, so it's information. You as a board member though, walking in, going into a teacher's classroom and going through their books in there is not a good situation.
Nobody suggested that, I don't think so.
I felt like you had said something about
we
that.
We had asked
like
before about getting a list of the books that were in there, and that was part of the exploratory conversation, is how do we know what books are in there? And that's when the whole conversation came up on teachers bringing books in and how they get books into the classroom and who brings them in, and that kind of just got dropped. But I have to ask, if the entire literature, whatever the word was there, Tom said, approved these books, when Tom brought the books, of those highly sexualized books that got then removed, who made that decision? Was it the same people that put it on the list? Or who made the decision to pull
it? I would like to say it's extremely challenging to vet books. While Amazon will give you what the book is about, very few of them, you know, they're listed as AY, or YA, they're listed as young adult books. And some of those books have ages, some of them don't. Tom provided a very valuable resource that we were able to use to further vet those books, but that wasn't something that website is it's a group of parents, right? And it was and what I liked about that is it wasn't, I did not pay attention to the ratings. I paid attention to what did they pull from those books? Mm-hmm. And that's why, and it was an extremely daunting task to go through all of these titles. And Tom, your site was extremely helpful. But it's not easy to vet these books.
Yeah. And maybe it brings up a good point. Maybe we shouldn't say that it's been thoroughly vetted when we know that's not the case. I mean, if you do something, tell us, be honest with us. This is all I'm asking. If you tell me you've thoroughly vetted this, I believe you. Well, I mean, I don't now, but I mean, I did before, so.
These books are, they are, what do teachers have to go by? They have to go by recommendations.
Well, that's fine, Dave. What I'm saying is that, just say, this is the recommendations that
that's
Amazon
fair.
Has given us. I have no idea what they are, or whatever now,
sure.
But this is what Amazon's told us.
And I would guess that once a student pulls a book off of the shelf and maybe shows a friend and shows another friend and maybe somebody shows the teacher, you know, that maybe this piece shouldn't be in the classroom, at that point maybe the teacher might put it on a back shelf or
put it
in a drawer or something like that. But we can't believe that the teachers have read all of these 1,700 titles.
I don't think
I didn't front say page that.
To
they back say
that. With us. Tell us what, if you haven't read them, say, I haven't read them.
Yeah.
I just got
right, don't say
you
that
in
them all.
Internet, you know?
Well, I'm sure they haven't vetted them
front to
back.
What did they say in
that
thing?
What's that? Oh.
What did they say?
Well, that's
thoroughly
what,
researched.
Thoroughly researched, which
okay, well,
doesn't say thoroughly read front to back.
Oh,
well, I did my
okay,
research.
Okay, well, I'll be more careful when I have to ask the right
question. So the research was, I guess, better.
I think
mine.
Further discussion
yeah.
and opening up those discussions in the classroom is going to help them decide whether or not it's a good fit for their classroom or maybe for an older age group or maybe not at all.
The last thing I want to share on this, and I would like for us to move forward, is this. And it's my own personal story. Daughter, she and school aren't best friends, okay? Reading came hard, and what got her hooked was animes, okay?
Right.
And that got her hooked. She's reading. She's at college, okay? And I think back, and we would buy her the books that were right out of Japan, so yeah, she had to read them. The other direction, okay, and they were some of the stories of, for example, of the
zombies, vampires.
Yeah, there was that
anime.
Kind of stuff right there.
Anime.
But my saying to that is, we have students here whose parents may not get them books, and so we have to find hooks. And so I think in terms of talking with David. The high school, that's part of trying to find hooks. We're hearing your voices, okay? So understand that the voices are being heard. So when we talk to people about future purchases, you know, we're going to share your stories about some of the other literature we would like to see. Because I think we had a conversation today, and you and Mandy were actually specifically talking about the types of books you guys like to talk
mm-hmm.
to. Okay, and they're and the go ahead. I'm not going to take your thunder here.
Well, no, I read not self-help, but I read informational texts. I read historical fiction. I read 4 or 5 books, maybe 10 books at a time, just excerpts. I'm a reader. I love books. I like a good romance, but you know, I don't know. And Mandy's the same. I mean, we just always have been able to talk books because we love books. And I think it's probably appropriate, Chelsea, that you're here because I don't know anyone who loves books any more than you.
I ordered the one that Darla was talking
about. Yeah,
so,
but anyway.
The reason why I share that is in hearing that conversation, that is another question. We know that these varied interests, but to get to informational text. Okay, that's an important concept because of that. So it's a start is what we're saying here, and we've heard your voices, okay? And
in that point, I'm an avid reader. Like, I go to bed and I read for hours. I might sleep 2 hours if I'm into a good book because I spent the other 5 reading. So I understand the love of reading, and I understand the love. But there are different books for different folks. And
right.
when you mention self-help books, there's actually, the author I think is Green, there's a bunch of self-help books in here, but they're all self-help from a one perspective. And I would have liked to have seen, if you're putting self-help books in, then offer different perspectives because there's different ways for different folks.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I only see one vision, I think we're ripping our kids off.
But what if we buy the other books and we don't know that they've already bought the other books and the kids go, not reading that, I want to read this.
Well, they can read whatever they want, but they need
choices.
Well,
no, not the way you're going. They
no,
can.
They can. They can read whatever they want. What I'm saying is this book purchase is full of horror stories, darkness, and whatnot, and I would like to have seen more lightness. I think I said that 4 times.
Yeah.
We have. So So can we move to the next subject?
The next couple items right there, Dave is going to take and kind of device accountability. And this came up, I want to say it's probably like last January, Dave and I started having a conversation around the cost of devices, fixes, and how much money we spend in that area. And said, we have got to do something. So he was charged, and the tech department was charged to come up with a process on that very area, because when I was starting to look at the data and how much we were spending annually in repairs, and that could be, he's going to get into what the different kinds of repairs and things were for replacements. So Dave, do you want to just go ahead and take this from here?
It is almost 9, so I am on overtime, but if you guys are okay with that,
hey.
I'm okay.
So, you get 4 minutes.
Okay.
You got 5 minutes, man.
Yeah. Not the salary.
No, I'm 100% salary. As Andy said, we, in the tech department, our job was to fix, and we did it well, we did it fast, and the buildings were making sure their kids had devices so they could learn. So everybody was doing their own thing, but there was no conduit between us saying what happened when somebody broke something, what did we do for communication to the parents, how did we help? So what we did is I requested Terry back then, as we met with the principals, we came up with some ideas, we talked about it starting in January, and met with our team, met with the tech liaisons to come up with a list of protocols that we want all buildings would follow, and that we could help, you know, instead of like just fixing something, there had to be a conversation first, then you could get your device back. Happened again, now you might have to pay for part of it. We added systems in place so building administrators could waive a fee, because they might know of hardships that are going on that we're not aware of. So we kind of come up with a nice system to where we could address repairs, minor repairs, vandalisms, lost devices that would be consistent across the district. And we started to get some of our data back in November, and we noticed it by what we did in repairs. We noticed there was a lot less. In that first round, September's always hard. Kids lose things. They don't tell their parents that it's broken. The teachers see it. So we get a lot of tickets in September. And once that word came out and parents started getting letters, we noticed that there has been a downturn in repairs. So it's really working. We've instituted a quality control. So every device coming in gets checked. We do the repair, and it actually gets checked again before it goes out. Because we want to regain the trust with the teachers and the families that, hey, if we say something was broken, we take pictures, we double check it, we make sure. We always err on the side of what the principal wants to do. We're just here to present them with what we found and what we did for the repairs. We've had a lot of great help from the buildings. At the high school and middle school, we have tech liaisons that support us full time. At the elementary levels, there's assigned staff members that help make the calls. We've tried to eliminate some of the overhead from the principals. So the first offense is waived unless it's like something ridiculous that somebody's seen or vandalism. The second offense, we not only give them a letter, but we have to follow up with a call. So we have a waiting period until we make contact with the families. The third offense, that's when you bring in the principal, and we have spare devices there. So students aren't without, they just might not be able to take it home if there's some kind of damage. So no student's ever not given a device, but they might lose privilege of taking it home if it's their second break or their third break. So it's really become a nice system, and we've been taking notes. So this summer, we meet about every 6 to 7 weeks with the tech liaisons to kind of go over how things are going, look at the data, what things do we need to do. And it's really been working well. I'll be honest with you. We've had, and I don't know, Terry or David, how many that you've even heard about, but it's actually, even the parents that are upset about it, it's been very few. It hasn't been like, I don't want my kid to have a device, just take it away. You know, there's only been a few situations where the parents have been upset. And it's been helpful for us, because what really turned me on to this was Custer Elementary last year. And real quick, we deploy iPads to classes or Chromebooks to classes, and it seemed like every time we go to a class, we deploy all these devices and we'd only get a portion of the chargers back. So I'm like, okay, Zach, hold on. Let's talk to Mrs. Bell and see if maybe she could talk to the teacher and communicate to the families and see what would happen. And it's like, we got like 98% of the stuff back after that. And I'm like, you know what? I think, you know, with COVID and giving everybody everything, there's like been a disconnect and a little bit of I need another one, not understanding what the cost of something is. So just by talking to the students and having this assistant from the assistance from the teachers and the principals, we've seen huge gain. So whereas people might say it's the cost that's helped. I think it's more the communication and, mm-hmm. and the learning. And so I'd be happy to answer any questions about it, but that's really, we call it the Student Accountability Project just because we had to have a name to file it and folder with all the documents, but it's yeah, not really
great.
That communication was shared with all of the families at the start mm-hmm. of the school year so that they knew about that ahead of time.
Yeah.
Teachers talked with their kids about it, and so the kids knew as well that, you know, if you break your Chromebook, you're not just going to get another one. Your mom and dad might have to, you know, help pay for the repairs. So, yeah, it's been great.
Seems like we got the best of both worlds there. We got devices to the people and some accountability.
Yeah, it's really, it's working
great.
Well, and we're hoping, and like what we've explained to the teachers, if we can bring that down, not only can we reduce costs, but we can buy better quality equipment.
Mm-hmm.
Because when we first started, we gave the students at the high school smaller devices. And working with Holly Wallace and the coaches, are like, the students at the high school really need a bigger screen.
Yeah.
They need more real estate, more power. Mm-hmm. So one of our goals was to reduce it so we could get those bigger devices at the middle school and high school, and we have done that. So that's the status quo now. So I really feel good about it. Ryan and Zach run that over there, and they're doing great with getting stuff turned around in 24 hours, unless there's a delay because we got to wait for the parents to pay or have a conversation with the administrator. So
I think what you call it is really cool. I think it fits. I think it's a good title. My question becomes, who determines what a family can afford and what a family can't afford? Because just because you go, okay, well, they seem like, you know, they have more, they can afford to buy a new tablet, when in reality,
so,
I don't know who can afford
that. So what we did to answer that a little bit, what we did last year and the years before is if you broke a Chromebook based on this model, this is the cost of the motherboard, the screen, the bezel, keys, it was all itemized by the model. So we went back and we said, okay, yeah, this is too complicated for everybody. So what we did is we said, if you break a Chromebook after 30 days, it's brand new, it's the price of the device. But after that, let's just, I'd have to look at the documentation, let's say 90 days, at that point it's $150 or replace it with a used one. So, which is considerably cheaper. So we're giving them a deal out right out of the gate. Same thing for an adapter. Most adapters are gonna run $35 to $40. And our price is much lower than that because we don't want them. We're not here to make a profit.
Yeah.
We're here to help the families. But to further answer your question, Darla, we really entrust the building administrators because they really know what those students are going through. But we also don't just randomly waive things. So our process is we get a device, we update PowerSchool with what was wrong with it. And there's a discipline log in PowerSchool, and the principal does have to waive it, and they put that information in there. So that way, if something happens again, somebody can look at it. It's not just arbitrarily waived. And there hasn't been a huge amount of waives.
So is there an opportunity for the family to show you their hardship? And, you know,
it wouldn't take even that. What it takes is that building principal, it's that phone call. It's being honest with each other. And then it comes down to trust. That principal had a conversation, and that parent's like, there's no way I can do this. Here's what's going on. And then that principal's like, okay, I can do this now, but we're going to need to work together so we don't have this in the future. We've even tried to work with the teacher and the principal together that if this student, you know, maybe that for this child, do they need to actually have the device go home on for the weekend? Or, you know, what is the best for that child right there, too? And so it doesn't create a damage there. But really, our administrators, and I remember I was talking with Brittany about this today, you know, they get on the phone and they have these conversations with parents all the time. And can have it and can listen. And at the end of the day, they're going to, these administrators every time will do right by the child. And believe the parent, if the parent's lying, so be it, but at the end of the day.
And we even offer like payments. So let's say they have a $75 repair. The principal might say, you know what, can you afford $10 a month or something like that? And that's what we found last year was certain schools were doing things different, and we wanted to kind of make it consistent across the district, but we wanted to be fair because, you know, my wife works at SMCC, and they have to buy a device, and they have to buy insurance. Well, when we looked at the cost for insurance, we would have to buy it for every single device. You get one, and there's different levels. It's cheaper for us to buy the repairs and accommodate some of those first, like the first offenses, and wipe it off the list because What we're hoping and what we've seen is those second and third offenses have reduced. And that's what our goal is.
Right.
So now the real key will be next year in September. Do we have less first offenses than we did this year? And that's what our goal is.
Yeah. I know a lot of principals actually go out to the students' homes.
Oh, absolutely.
Even high school, I know it still goes out.
Some are trusting those.
And we never question a principal. They're the final word on that. And I've waived a couple because I know the situation. I'll talk to the tech. We try to use as many spare parts as we can. So, okay, maybe we'll just fix this. We won't replace it. You know, we're trying to just curb it a little bit, because if we didn't, it was going to get out of hand where we would start worrying about sacrificing the whole grade level repurchase.
Oh, I think it's a good program.
So, Dave, AV enhancements there. That was one of the questions came up about the cameras.
So first I want to apologize. We've had two projects, AV enhancements, which is the sound system. It was passed about a year and a half ago at all the auditoriums, the lunchrooms, the gyms. That's AV enhancements. There's a typo. So what you're referring to, I think, was the PA the PA enhancements.
Yeah.
So I'd be happy to answer any questions about that. I can go over the basic of it.
So those rooms were not excluded on the original plan, because the way I read it was like, oh, we kind of think now we have to have them. And I'm like, well, why didn't you have them the first time around? And what made the change that now it needs to be done?
So when we first did it, BidPack 1, we started the high school. BidPack 2 started after the school year started. That's why BidPack 2 is only PA system upgrades. And what happened, what we found was, and it was all the elementaries in Orchard, is they just basically did when they did the design, a one-for-one swap of the speakers, the PA system. So, you know, offices, bathrooms, little areas that might have just been left out were missed. So we brought it up to them, and they said, well, we're going to work and use your telephone. There's a way to do that. We can help you out. We can figure out. Well, Valcom's like, no, we don't do that. And we didn't want that anyways, because I don't want anybody to be able to unplug or turn something off that could be a warning system. So when we went back, we figured all the areas, and that's what this list is. Now, if you look at the middle school and the high school, the only thing that was missed there, because we caught it, so we said, okay, guys, before you start this, we want to look at the maps and make sure every room's covered. The only ones at Custer was the two bathrooms we added from BidPack 3. That was down on the end, so we had to fill those in.
I think a boiler room or something,
yeah.
If I recall.
Yeah, so they're very small areas due to construction or add-ons that we had to switch. And we did have some attic stock that we did fill in some as well, because each bid pack gave us a percentage of spare speakers that we tried to do. But unfortunately, if we do a true mass notification, we really want any place a student or a staff member could be to be able to get that warning system.
Sure. Yeah.
So that's what this was. This was only to fix BidPack 2 speakers.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Dave, on a related subject, we got some new cameras for the buses, and I know the principals are in charge of that or whatever. Now, how's that working?
Actually, talking to Patty, we have meetings every Monday with transportation and maintenance all together.
Right.
They're using them. They're loving it. Patty loves them. The principals love them.
No complaints from the principals, too much work and all that? Or?
No, and actually we added, I trained our help desk, so if the principal doesn't have time, all they have to do is make a call. Well, let's say the video's long or it's the bus is in a low signal area, they can call our help desk and do that for them.
The system works really well. We had a situation one morning, and literally Patty is able to get on live and see what's going on and help provide guidance. So it's really helpful. But then I remember too, we had some of the administrators that also watch live. Meet the bus. And so it's actually, it's moving so those administrators can address the issue very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes that investigation time from half an hour and just shrinks it. Mm-hmm. And that's an important amount of time right there. So
a lot of principals have been riding the bus.
No.
Really?
No, I mean,
what did you just say?
A lot of the principals will ride the bus.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
We do have some good news though. Cassie was working with our E-Rate representative, and when we first looked at this project, we didn't have time because they weren't available, but Cradle Point is a piece of technology that would stick on the bus that would basically connect a wireless, a local wireless and a Verizon's car together. So the key, what we want to do is when that bus pulled in, it would offload that video so they could get to it faster. Right now they're going through a Verizon network, which based on signal, there's issues with it. It's not perfect. But we can get a, almost, I want to say free, but.
Yeah.
Free, which is probably $3,000 a bus. So, and it'll also, if we choose, well, we kind of have to, but we can control it, give students access to iReady and some of those programs while they're on the bus.
Oh, nice. To be able to qualify for using it with E-Rate, you have to, it has to permit the students to use their district technology.
So if the bus driver makes a wide turn like they did around me the other day, that lets all go falling and all the screens get broken.
We do have good cases on that.
Yeah, we do.
I'd rather have them be practical and use them productively.
Right.
So the last two items is the functional furniture update. So we have had, and that was in a board briefing, so there was a question around it. So we have had to do some updates of some furniture because we've made some really nice enhancements and it's increased the quality of those departments. And some of that furniture was old and so it was needed. But I think where the question comes is that we know that there are some buildings. I remember when we were over at Manor, you're like, oh my goodness, this front, can we do something here? And so, and you talk about ceiling tiles, and Dave and Cindy have been working on a plan with Tim, because what we're really working on trying to do is between either the custodian and or a maintenance person is really more of a people that are always having their eyes on stuff and just starting to address it. And so we're putting together, and it's just about ready to be completed right there. They're just working through the final steps, and we'll share this with you very soon. But this idea of empowering some of our maintenance staff, if you see it, to fix it. And it comes almost to the level of like ownership of a building kind of a mentality, okay? And or the ownership of, for example, grounds. And so we have we're looking at this team, and so the grounds are their baby. And so, you know, that's everything from the doors out. And so power washing of an entrance to the yard to that. And so we're really been pushing on this. And so that plan here is gonna be in front of you guys very soon on how they're gonna continue to execute and make that happen so that when these ceiling tiles or other things are broke or needs to be addressed, it gets addressed. Okay.
So the ceiling tiles got fixed?
Not all of them at Manor yet, but it is on our list.
Yep.
So one of the things that Tim's really working on, we're working together to come up with a system of furniture, blinds, carpet, as well as other structural updates that our department can handle internally to replace.
Some of that stuff you can look at and go, that really wouldn't take much to fix some of those things.
It wouldn't, like, but when you pull it down, if there's something that's causing that, or when you start adding up the ceiling tiles in this district, I'm going to be honest with you, holy mackerel. Because it's my pet peeve when we move data ports and they get messed up. I'm like, so there's tickets in, but some of these buildings just aren't designed, like the drop ceilings are easy ones.
That's awesome.
But yeah. But then again, if they colored on them, we got to work with the buildings because they, it's easier for us to look at the district level and say, okay, Manor's hallway, we're going to address these classroom ceilings and then execute it over the summer.
Is Arborwood the only one that has asbestos ceiling tiles now, or is it?
Riverside.
Riverside too.
And there's probably other ones that's in the tile itself, but actual.
I'm going to say Manor, because their ceiling tiles look like they're 150 years old.
Yeah.
And the desk for the principal, I believe, is probably can date back about the same time.
So for example, though,
historical
at Raisinville.
As marked out, write a book about it.
Raisinville and Manor, when it comes to the office furniture, we're not going to change it right now. And the reason being is those offices are potentially going to get redesigned with new entrants.
I think these are just examples of things that you look at and you go, wow, you know, I'm sure these offices need updated. I know.
A lot of it's choice, too. If they have the money, they might want to get a teacher this or do other things and that aren't as important. That's something I've seen, too, where they each get the money and to locally administering their building.
But we identify and...
If it's a, like Waterloo was a major need furniture because of a staff member, so we had to address that.
On the fly, we do it too, though. But, I mean, we're both pretty...
With that, though, the biggest thing we've actually been attacking is to get to consistency. And that is the consistency of when we're talking about like the blinds, classroom furniture, office furniture, so it's coming from the same vendor, so that when people put it together, and so then that way when, and then what we found was that individual buildings would do ordering, okay, and then operations will learn about it. And so what we're actually doing is we're pushing everything through operations so that when that order comes through and they see what a building wants, they go, oh, hold on now. What you're looking for, I actually have right here. And so we don't have a duplication, and so that's why, too, and some of these processes are all being redesigned at the same time. So we are aware of that part right there. And then the last item is security service agreement. So that is Robert's security, okay? And that was in your board briefs. And what that's all about right there is that that contract, they brought it, and honestly, he would have been okay with like 50 cent an hour. But here's the thing, gang. 70 cents on the dollar goes to the employee. So you give you go, okay, yeah, we're gonna do 50 cents. That means that employee just got 35 cents. No, we can't do that.
I have
here's
no
why.
Idea how much they get, how much is given to the employees, how much is given to whatever.
Right.
And they'll just show me.
You know that is how the contract.
So last, when talking with Cassie, the last time that when he was here and he presented, the owner, that's what he talked. He goes, it's a 70-30 because of paying on taxes, paying the other costs, and then the marginal that he would take.
Oh, see,
so,
yeah.
So at the end of the day, so when we look at that, we're going, okay, well, at when you're looking at $22 an hour, that's total cost on the that he's receiving. And so that's why we said the dollar, because at the end of the day, the employee's only getting 70 cents.
Wait. He's got to show us that first. I mean, I don't take anything just for granted because somebody told me.
Okay. So you would like for him to come in and present?
No, I'm just saying, hey, no, I'm saying do an RFP. We did an RFP before. He didn't come out the lowest guy.
But the other thing is, I'm going to share that was not, for our district right now, that would be the wrong direction to go. We can RFP it, but you have people at the high school right now that are the security out there that are like family members to that are almost like regular, almost like MPS employees.
Fine. Don't be an MPS. Well,
I think it's to Larry's point. We can RFP it, and we can always use that as a negotiation way with him, bring him down a little bit. If he's not the lowest.
Yep.
So, it's an unrolled vendor.
Yeah.
So again, we're back to we.
He's a nice guy. I like Corky, but I mean, just because he's my friend,
From 50 cents. An hour increase and move it to a dollar because back to the 70-30. And again, you know, you'd have to get into his books for him to actually show you that he's giving that 70 cents. But that when we looked at it going at $25 an hour, this is 70%, it's under $18 an hour these employees make. And so we look at what we pay all of our staff, you know, and our parapros are making.
Almost that.
So we can go back to 50 cents. I mean, we can go to 25 cents. I mean, he was just bringing it forward. And so,
or maybe we can restructure some other organization or whatever not to.
How many people does he employ here?
Three.
115.
Yeah, it's got to be 10 to 15, I would say.
It's just very small.
I don't know at the middle school. I know in the high school I see a list of names.
Right.
Different guards.
It has to be under 20.
Yeah,
oh, it is.
More than 20.
The high school, I consistently see four people out there.
Middle school has,
I believe, two.
And then we have them in our room.
Yeah, so I believe so that's six.
They are a contract that is a subcontract.
Yep.
So we contract out those services to this organization. And because that organization pays their employees less than what our staff gets paid.
No,
so
I'm trying to follow along here. I'm lost.
So Corky reached out to my office to ask about doing a multi-year contract this year and to possibly have an increase. The last time that we did an increase, we hadn't done one in a number of years.
Oh, we have, so we did it in 21.
That's the year I'm talking
about. Oh, okay.
In 21, we hadn't increased the wage for a significant number of years.
But he's a subcontractor, so he can charge whatever he wants.
So our contract is with Robert Security. Mm-hmm. He pays his people whatever he pays them.
Right.
And he charges us X. At that time, he said that increase would allow him to pay his employees X dollars. And the remaining portion was his to offset his overhead for running the company. Which, at that time, it was 70% of the increase was going to the employees, 30% was his. To cover the cost of his employer withholdings and all the other things that you have to do as a business owner. So at this time, he was asking, and he didn't put a number to it himself. When Andy and I spoke and we were looking at the wages of things, we felt like a dollar increase would be beneficial to his staff and his to retain those people that he has and to perhaps attract other people that maybe wouldn't have been interested if it was, you know, 70 cents less an hour.
So
why
it makes
don't
me
employ these people directly?
Because then we would definitely be paying more than what we're paying to Corky, because we would have to pay retirement, which is almost 30%, plus FICA, plus insurance.
Oh, the third thing, like we do
management. Well, Robert Security is a third party.
No, like our teachers.
So my
really
question.
Do everything. So.
Oh, though.
When these.
Yeah.
When these contracts come up, why is there not an opportunity to open up for other businesses to put a bid in when these contracts are up and due? And if they present and this guy presents the best scenario and has the best thing, because there was something else that we had requested for multiple people to be brought in, and I don't remember what it was for, and I don't know that they ever came in, and I don't remember what that was for, but the opportunity for the board to say, okay, these are the choices. We understand that there's a relationship here, which, sorry, everybody else, they have that relationship that is part of that. I'm always confused as to why those aren't.
So,
why do you have to do forever?
In the board policy, it specifies if you're purchasing an item over the certain threshold, then you have to put it out for bid. The state statute indicates you have to put out for bid construction projects, food purchases over $100,000, and I feel like something else, but I can't remember it right this second. So in our policies and the state guidelines, it's not mandatory to go out to an RFP for every service that you're bidding.
So our policy doesn't say.
No, it does not reference
first,
services.
First, it used to be that it was not in there. When I got on the board, we put it in there. Okay, then it got taken out. So right now, services are not out.
It does not list services.
Does not list services. But that doesn't mean that we can't challenge
right
a service that's being done here. I mean, I, you know, how much are we paying
do it all.
Corky,
however,
right?
Right now it's $20 an hour.
Well, how much is it per month or what? I forgot.
It varies based on the hours that
his
people
pay. Let me see if I can find this.
And I don't remember which year I can look through
yeah.
my files, but when I spoke to Kathy previously, we did put it out for RFP
yep.
before, and we did go with another company.
No,
and
we did not.
We did.
No, we did not. I was on the committee. Can't say he was. There was five companies that actually were credible companies. He was right in the center. We gave him the. Cindy, was you on that committee?
For a short.
He was,
I can finish.
Well, let me finish
no,
first. Let me finish.
You interrupted me first.
Well, I'm sorry, but the bottom line is that he was right in the center. Okay. And he was not the lowest bidder. The reason we gave it to him because he was family. I mean, he had a relationship with us. And I thought, what the hell?
We did have a number of vendor for a short period of time, and almost immediately their services were not up to par with what we were receiving from Robert Security. So we ended that contract after a very short period of time and brought them back on.
Who was that contract?
I have to look in my notes.
It wasn't that. Okay.
So that price line, I don't see it being beat by much anyway.
Mm-hmm. So,
and I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And in addition, the staff that he employs in our buildings have relationships with our students, and they have a level of trust with those staff members.
Go to a basketball game, you'll watch literally their gentlemen sweep our floors. So the whole point of this was that, yes, there are times that we should RFP. Okay, I'll sure practice it. We need to do it. But we don't, I don't think it's right, though, to just go and do more work for no point.
No, you're right, Andy. And, but the point being is that, hey, look, you know, these people are getting, I don't know, let's say it's $20,000 to $30,000 a month. Whatever. Okay, I mean, if we, like Cassie said, if that was a, instead of a service, if that was a good, we'd have to vote on it, okay? Does it make any sense to give them, let's say, $100,000 a year and not vote on it? Makes no sense.
So,
and if we can reduce costs, why not reduce costs?
So I think we did that out with custodians, and that kind of blew up on our face.
So I go, no, so,
he,
but here's
we
the
did with custodians.
That blew
really
up on our face.
If you want, to reduce costs, then we have to figure out is how to reduce the hours, the people that we need. It's particular buildings or particular settings.
And you're probably right, Andy, because I mean,
that's where
I wonder if we could use technology.
That's where,
as opposed to individuals, because you know, we have to use cameras and all those smart devices that we. Do we need four people? No. We may not need four people. So I think our RFP, what it would do for us, it would show us various ways of operations. And that could be a cost saving. I mean, yes, when they did the bids, and I think it was 12 when they did it. We didn't have the same access to technology as we do now. You know, let's see what they come up with.
Was that any other questions or anything?
So what are we going to do with it?
So I just kind of need to get kind of a feel.
Oh.
There's not a straw vote, but I kind of...
But it
kind
of is.
It's not, because I kind of heard Tom say, you know, I think there's some power right there.
It's data points. I mean, it's maybe, you know, you say
great.
We have to change vendors, but at least it's kind of a sanity check.
Yeah, great.
Well, the next thing was he brought it to us, so we are still, I mean, the contract's a contract right now, so nothing to change, so we will look into that part right there.
So we're going to put it up early.
We'll put something together. Okay.
What was the other thing we wanted two or three people brought in? Oh, it was the choice to use MASB, that there were other organizations besides MASB,
right.
And there were other ones, and we were going to bring in three. To a cross section to say, do we want to use MSAB, whatever it is, or the other ones?
Do
whatever
really
happened
need,
with that?
Do we really need an organization to do this strategic plan?
Yes, we do.
Yeah, we do.
This is not something we want to do.
I mean,
where do we get with that? Okay.
MSAB has
so
one person that does everything.
Groups.
When you're
okay.
An expert,
is
that
coming up soon?
I think you're also
okay.
An expert.
That was a little
while. That's what the people in law say.
Okay. I'm looking for a motion to adjourn this meeting.
Okay.
I'm adjourned.
Support.
Show of hands. Go home. Fall down.
Have a safe one, everybody. We'll see how Friday goes.